Four statues of African women bearing torches removed from the Shelburne Hotel in Dublin in July in the mistaken belief that two of them were statues of slave women are to be reinstalled. The hotel on Stevenson Stevens Green in the city centre, owned by US property company Kennedy Wilson and operated by the Marriott Group, has told the City Council they will return the statues to their plinths outside the hotel where they had stood since 1867. For more, let's talk to art historian Kyle Layden and first to Ronan McGreevy, who has the story on the front page of the Irish Times this morning. Ronan, good morning. Remind us why the statues were removed.
They were removed in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement and its emphasis on the legacy of slavery. It was around the time that the Colston statue in Bristol was thrown into the river. So there had been a complaint from somebody in America, and on foot of that, they decided to remove the statues.
Kyle, good morning and thanks for taking our call today. You discovered the original catalogue from where the statues were ordered and found that they weren't slaves. Tell us more about what else you found.
Yes, that's right. The idea of these statues being slaves never sat terribly easily with me. So when I'd heard the statues were removed, I decided to try and do some research to see where the idea had come from. And certainly I could find no older source than Elizabeth Bowen's 1951 novel-esque evocation of the Shelburne and its people, which stated that the statues were in fact slaves. A simple online search of the foundry which made the statues brought me to its 1867 trade catalogue from which the statues would originally have been ordered. This reveals that they were originally designed by the French sculptor Moreau and were mass-produced both as lamp standards and fountains. Examples exist all over the world, from India to Paraguay. In no other example of the pair are any of them referred to as slaves. In the trade catalogue, they were simply given titles which referred to the ethnicity of the two women represented. One was Egyptian, the other sub-Saharan African. I then searched the archives of the Irish Builder, a contemporary magazine which detailed building schemes across the country. So on the 1st of March 1867, a correspondent provided a comprehensive technical description of the new Shelburne Hotel building, which stated that the statues were of Egyptian maids, so just Egyptian women, which were purchased not by the architect or indeed the owner of the Shelburne, but rather directly by the builder of the building from the foundry in France. Nowhere in any of this was there any evidence that they were to be seen as slaves, and as I said, the only source which I could find which named them, any of them, as being slaves, and it was only two of them, was Elizabeth Bowen's 1951 book. And I think as a result of that, there was a certain degree of circular reinforcement of the idea that at least two of the statues were slave girls. Elizabeth Bowen describes two as Elizabeth as Egyptian princesses as a result of their headdresses, and the other two she describes as slaves, but nothing older than that could be found.
Why do you think these statues were chosen by the owners in 1867?
Well, they were part of a mania for all things Egyptian, which really followed from Napoleon's campaign in Egypt from 1798 to 1801. Napoleon wished to vest that campaign with Enlightenment legitimacy. And so he sent a huge band of artists and scientists to Egypt in the wake of his troops to study Egyptian culture, which for the first time in history became widely known in Europe. As a result, all things Egyptian suddenly became extremely fashionable in Europe during a movement called Egyptomania. The main attractions of Egypt to these people were really references to luxury and wealth. And obviously, those were extremely useful when you're building a new hotel to refer to the luxury and wealth of the patrons and what you might expect when you actually visit the hotel. And that certainly would refer them more to being representations of aristocratic Egyptian and sub-Saharan African women rather than slaves.
Ronan, why are the statues going to be reinstalled and why now?
Well, there's a couple of reasons, Gavin. One is that, the hotel itself, there's been an enforcement notice served on the hotel at the end of July, stating that they were that there was a possible breach of planning permission. These are part of the facade of the Shelburne, which was done up in 2016, and the facade is a protected structure. So there was an enforcement notice sent from Dublin City Council, and they had to respond to that, and they were asked asked for an extension of 4 weeks to respond to it. So now this is their response, that they had commissioned a report by Professor Paula Murphy, who confirmed really what Kyle has just told you there, that they are not depictions of slave women, and therefore they will be restored to their plinths.
Kyle, as you had explained previously, the golden bands on the feet of the women are seen to be jewellery rather than shackles. But given the context of the conversation which led to their original removal, could the statue still be felt to be offensive to those sensitive to how our culture is represented and how women or black people are depicted?
Well, absolutely. And I've always substantially agreed that there are definite issues with the statues. And the one positive thing perhaps to come out of this is that I'm very glad that that conversation has taken place. I've made a career of trying to make people think about the meanings of the built environment. And this conversation has certainly done that. There remain three, I suppose, main problematic issues with the statues. Firstly, there can be no doubt that they form part of a common 19th century artistic fetishization of the culture of the East as licentious and sexualized. The post-colonial academic Edward Said, of course, famously cast such representations as the creation of a cultural hierarchy where the Occident was centered and the Orient was othered. There's no doubt that the statues form part of that Orientalist discourse. Secondly, regardless of how true the slave identification actually was, the fact that there's clearly a very widely held misconception that they might have been slaves might in itself be enough to justify a call for the removal. And finally, it's not really my place as a white man to comment on the impact these statues might have on a woman or a person of colour who views them today. But such impact, of course, may itself again be a reason for their removal. The one difficulty, obviously, I have with the planning issue in relation to this particular matter was that it seemed to be being put forward that this idea that the conversation which had started as a result of what seems to be an illegal removal was in itself a reason to justify that removal. And I think that would be a very dangerous planning law issue in itself. Furthermore, I do think that the removal of the statues would be somewhat disproportionate. They are, of course, part of one of the most important 19th century architectural ensembles in Ireland, really the only surviving 19th century hotel on this scale anywhere in Ireland. They weren't intended to have any political meaning, and certainly, in my opinion, whilst accepting their problematic nature, I still think the removal would have been disproportionate. Any issue with their supposed meaning could have been dealt with by the hotel by affixing a plaque to one of them or printing a leaflet. Senator Batrick, of course, my old law professor, from whom I hold the highest esteem and respect, said that one woman's anklet is another's manacle. But by the same token, it's just as true that one person's problematic representation of African women can, when properly contextualised with a leaflet or with a label on one of the statues, be a potent reminder that two of the world's most ancient civilizations, which far outstripped anything formed in Europe in antiquity, longevity, and cultural output, were found in Africa, and their glories and the glories of Africa were still being celebrated in 1867.
Kyle Layden, art historian Kyle Layden, and Rona McGreevy from the Irish Times, thank you both very much for speaking to us this morning.